And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast live from the MIT Sloan Sports thing, where I'm thrilled to be joined finally by my old Grantland.com colleague, current NBA Game of Thrones impresario, Jason Concepcion Network, the Corgi. How are you?
Hello. I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm good.
It's great to see you.
It's good to see you.
What a fantastic thing to be here together.
At the Sloan Conference. How many Sloans is this for you?
This is three.
Yeah.
But two actually involved in it.
Okay. You got to be involved.
Being involved is much better than not being involved.
Because you can go in the room.
Yeah,
you can go in the speaker's room.
I think that's important to really get the full experience.
Yes. It's a large conference. To be able to escape to a small private room is very important.
Yeah.
You doing good? You doing well? Everything good?
I feel good. I think, I feel healthy. Knock on wood.
Do you miss New York at all?
I do. I do miss New York. LA's fine. The weather is great. It's been cold.
Everyone's complaining. It's raining all the time, apparently.
It's been raining a lot. That said, when it's not raining, it's still like almost 70 degrees in February and March, which is great. Being out here in Boston where it's 19 degrees and I'm walking around being like, why do people live like this?
It's snowing again.
Yeah.
It's going to snow again tomorrow. It's going to just keep snowing. Every year March comes and I tell my wife, we're almost there. It's going to be spring soon. And she's like, you're such a idiot. March sucks every year. And every year on March 1st, it snows. And she's like, see what an idiot you are. Didn't even wait till March 5th. March 1st, it snows.
And she's smarter than you.
I get my hopes up for March every year. It's stupid. It's stupid.
So the weather's great, but I do miss New York's vibe, but I am at a place in my life where I'm willing to trade like 20% of a city's vibrancy for 70 degree weather year round.
Fair. Where are you a month later on the Kristaps Porzingis trade?
I feel
your large adult son.
He's moving on.
Is he moving on to college? Is he moving on? Like, what's the analogy we want to use?
He's moved out of the house and he's going to pursue his career. I'm not really sure what he's doing.
He's like trying to make it in acting. It's a bad decision. He's trying to make it in LA.
I wish him well. I told him, listen, I'm not going to stop you from doing what you want to do. At the same time, don't expect support. If you need some cash, you're gonna have to get a job.
Yeah,
my friend. I feel two ways about it. The first way is that, all the kind of buzz around a potential KD move has made me feel better. There's just so many people that are in a position to have an informed opinion or like, this is real. This is real for various reasons that they then tick off. That's one. So I feel good about that. Obviously, if they land KD, you would call it a success. The second part of it is, this is really no way to run a team. Can you run a team like this where it's like you're gambling on a guy and an under the table handshake deal working out over the course of 3 months? This guy could change his mind at any time.
Do you think you could get KD and Kyrie and like if you were friends with both of them and you tried to meet for coffee, do you think you could just do that? Do you think you could actually just meet for coffee or would they just mix up the days? Would they be moody? Would Kyrie be like coffee? What is coffee?
Why are you talking about coffee? What does that have to do with anything?
Is it a placebo or is it real? And if it's a placebo effect that caffeine is having, maybe we're all in the matrix.
You understand what I'm saying about coffee? Like, why would I drink it?
I don't know
it?
If you could get them together for coffee. I think the biggest, if the Knicks somehow got both of them, I think you would be among the biggest winners because the sheer comedy of like, they will be miserable within a week. They'll like plot and plot and plot, well, both signed in New York and they'll be instantly miserable.
I don't know what you're talking about, Zach, because as you well know, there is very little media attention in New York. Very little buzz, very little hype. The local reporters that follow the team are very, very chill. There's going to be very little scrutiny on them. No questions, really. Wins, losses, it's very, very relaxed there.
Yeah.
So I don't understand what you're talking about, Zach. I think, Kyrie and KD,
We would not get through camp.
If you are within the sound of my voice, New York City's so relaxed.
So you want this. Is that your A pairing? Is that like option one or is it option one only because it seems feasible? Like KD plus who?
That would be my option one. Okay. Let's do that. But I think more than that, it's gotta get KD. That's the one. Gotta land him. If you don't land him, it looks pretty bad.
So Mitchell Robinson.
Oh yeah.
First ballot Hall of Famer. Does he have to wait a few years to get in? Where are we on that?
I think I'd wait another year, and then I'd put him in for it. I love Mitch. Obviously he is incredibly raw and plays like he's got a car battery attached to his genitals at all times. You know, there's just something to be said about a guy with a long body who thinks he can block every shot.
He really does think he can block every shot.
So, listen, if they can develop him and get him to be a little bit more wise about how he uses his fouls, work within a system a little bit more, I'd love to see him how he plays on a team that's trying to win and is actively competing in games. But I'm really happy with what I'm seeing from him.
Who's your favorite random, and by favorite could mean anything. It could be really mean least favorite. Like, who's going to be your most memorable Nick of, like, the mellow, like, the post-insanity mellow and then into the tank era? Like, who's going to be the guy you're like, man, I watched Alonzo Trier play a lot of games. Like, who's going to be that guy?
Oh, my God. So you're talking about, like...
Like, 2013 through now, as the Knicks have one good year and then descend into hell... Like, who's just the guy who you're like, man, I can't believe I watched that dude play like 250 NBA games and like analyzed his play and how it might project onto a real team.
Oh, man.
I have my pick.
Well, let's hear yours.
Ron Baker.
I can't believe they signed him that contract.
I've told his agent, Aaron Mintz at CAA, told him in 5 years, when it's all over, there's no more stakes left, I want to write the oral history of Ron Baker's contract.
How did it happen? Do you know anything?
It's the most. It was 2 years, $10 million with a player option.
Yeah, that's the thing. The player option is insane.
It's the most inexplicable contract. It's more inexplicable than Bismack Biyombo and Timofey Mozgov. It's like, I'm not even kidding. I want to write the oral history of the Ron Baker contract. I want to know exactly what Ron Baker was doing when the paper, when like the number came in. Like, what was Ron Baker's reaction? It was like, $10 million? Well, player option? So wait, it's not non-guaranteed. It's like my choice. Like, it's going to be $4.9 million. It's going to be up to me.
Truly unbelievable. I love that pick. Also, notably a author of children's books. I'm going to go with Alexei Shved.
Ooh, that's a great one.
Simply because, you know, I honestly don't know why, but I loved watching him because he's just so goofy and bad. He had this really interesting energy where, you know, he moved around kind of like an NBA player, but then nothing good ever happened.
He also was he's in the conversation for worst NBA defensive player I've ever
Unbelievable.
Seen. He was just constantly 8 feet away from his guy. Kyle Korver or Rudy Gobert, it didn't matter. He'd be like 8 feet away from his guy. It didn't matter. He just didn't want contact, didn't want even the possibility that if he reached out his arm and his guy reached out his arm as far, still couldn't touch.
He didn't want to smell a person. He didn't want to have like the breeze of them touch his body as they went by.
One of my other favorite memories from this Knicks era will be the visceral anger that Knicks fans felt that Mike Woodson would not play Pablo Prigioni more. That was like smart Knicks Twitter was like, Prigioni needs 35 minutes a game.
I mean, listen.
And I love Pablo Prigioni.
I love Pablo Prigioni, one of the sneakiest and one of the smartest players, just most cerebral players
yes.
that's honestly ever played for the Knicks since I've been watching them.
Not a word that's been associated with the Knicks, cerebral.
Not at all, but so smart. And every time he was in, he did something good. All those blindside steals and steals off inbounds and just incredible. Didn't want to shoot the ball at all, but like so smart. I think, you know, obviously the problem was he came into the league when he was 57 years old. And just did not have the endurance to play 30 minutes a game.
Not as good a story of Milos Teodosic coming in the league at age 30 with a smoking habit
right.
and a history of drinking off the court. Not drinking badly, but just like he likes to live the life.
And
everybody in the NBA was like, ooh, he's not going to make it. 82 is going to be a lot of games for Milos. And he comes out of the gate like gangbusters, and then sure enough, like January, this is hard.
Milos is like first team all NBA guy who looks like he definitely came from Europe and was smoking cigarettes. Yeah.
Like, he was smoking cigarettes. That's not a joke.
Absolutely rumpled looking dude who looks like he was up all night playing backgammon, like in a Serbian bar.
Yeah. I forgot how to play backgammon. I played with my dad when I was a kid. I just like, sometimes I like to zoom out and go to Basketball Reference and take a team that's been bad for like 4 years and look at their rosters over 4 years and just remember caring that like that journeyman player was like, how is he going to fit? Like when that, like it's just, you just, wow, that was a long
time
ago.
You know, a special consideration here, didn't play a lot of minutes. Special consideration here for Chris Smith, brother of J.R. Smith, who, and this should never be forgotten. We don't talk about this enough. The Knicks signed JR's brother as a favor?
Yeah.
To JR Smith?
He was that valuable to the team.
And he played like 2.5 minutes, but was on the team. And we cannot, this should never be forgotten that that happened.
And now JR Smith literally has vanished.
He's gone.
Like he just got banished from the Cleveland Cavaliers. He's like, yeah, I'm cool with that. It's like,
yeah, I'm great.
I'm going to ride my funky duck around where I don't even know where he is. I assume he's in LA because that's where all players go when they have nothing to do.
People, one of the most important things we do for our health every day, twice a day, hopefully, is brushing your teeth. And most of us don't do it properly. That's why we need to buy Quip. Quip is a better electric toothbrush created by dentists and designers, so it looks cool. It was designed to make brushing your teeth more simple, affordable, and even, dare I say, enjoyable. A built-in 2-minute timer pulses every 30 seconds to remind you to switch sides so you're not over-brushing the right side and not the left side. Up to 90% of us, apparently, don't brush for a full 2 minutes. 2 minutes is a long time. If you actually sat and counted 2 minutes, it's a long time. Or don't clean our evenly, side by side. Brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. 3 out of 4 people use bristles that are old, worn out, and ineffective. 3 out of 4, that's too many people. A lot of people. Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association, which seems important, and has thousands of verified 5-star reviews. That's why I love Quip and why they're backed by over 20,000 dental professionals. And best of all, Quip starts at just $25. I assumed a high-end electric toothbrush would cost way more than that. If you go to getquip.com/low, my last name, you get your first refill pack for free with the purchase of a Quip electric toothbrush. That's getquip.com/low, getquip.com/low.
What was the origin of the Ringer desktop, which has become already within a year became a staple of league discourse?
Well, we wanted to create a show that was kind of like, I love the soup. I don't know if you remember
The Soup
course. On E!, which is kind of like a pop culture rundown show.
Was so Joel McHale the original host
Joel
of The
McHale,
Soup?
Yeah. Yeah. So we wanted to do something like that, and I was really taken with the idea of trying to capture the way NBA discourse is experienced through social media, through the internet. So we just hit on this idea of having it through my desktop with a screen record, as if you're looking over my shoulder, or actually looking through my eyes, and just surfing the links on the internet through Twitter and through Reddit, and just seeing what's going on.
So the final product is typically like 9 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a full day? What's the process of whittling us, of getting the material, whittling it down? Obviously, there's prep that goes into it and all that, but like, what's the total load we're talking about?
So we compile a document, a Google Doc that's basically the same Google Doc that you see on the show, over the course of that week from Friday to Wednesday. Wednesday we have our first pre-production meeting where we flag anything. Basically, like, we make sure that if Hotels.com, for instance, which is, I'm just making that up, but if Hotels.com was like going to sponsor something on The Ringer, I don't have a joke in there where I'm like, Hotels.com. So that's mainly that, and we talk about the material. And then Thursday morning, before the shoot, about 10 a.m., we get together and we run through the doc again, see if anything new happened over the night that's worth talking about. Then we go in, we shoot for an hour-ish, and then are done by 12:15 Pacific, and then they edit that, get the first cut around 5, and we're probably done by 7:38.
Wow. That's a full day.
Yeah.
That's a full day. What's the bit that got cut that you were saddest about that got cut?
Oh man, I almost don't want to spoil it, but we have a thing that we shot that we couldn't use, but that we will use if the Celtics' current swoon continues.
Ooh.
And I'll just leave it there. We shot it, but then they won that night, so we shelved it, figuring they'll do this again.
Is Simmons involved?
Simmons is not. There's time now to reshoot it. We had a bit where he would come in at the end.
Okay.
So
you're rooting. What you're saying is you're rooting for the Celtics to lose.
No, I would never. No. What? Okay. What?
What has been the best spice you've ever gotten in this spice? Like, what was the spiciest spice?
Man, it's hard to pick one out, but it would have to be any one of Chris Ryan's, who's had really some of the most fire breathing spice that we've ever had. It's hard to select one.
I got to look back at his dossier. I don't remember a Chris Ryan spice off the top of my head.
He's got some really great ones, but I think I would have to say one of Chris Ryan's spices. But I can't pick one.
I think you got to really bring. Like Simmons came on with spice a few weeks ago. Maybe it was at All Star, mm-hmm. and his spice was basically maybe the Celtics are better off without Kyrie. Mm-hmm. Basically, like that's not even spicy enough. I don't think they're better off without Kyrie, but there's evidence piling up that they play really well without Kyrie.
Yes,
and something's going. I think you got to be more spicy than
there
that.
There is a small but significant sample size that tells us that. To be fair to Simmons' take, I think it is a spicier than you think, because his so that he pointed that out, that that's the case, they're playing better without him. But his reasoning for why is that Gordon Hayward has PTSD because it was Kyrie who threw him the ball when he had the injury, and so now every time he looks at Kyrie, he flashes back to that moment.
Okay, that you're right. That's a little. I thought you were going to say Gordon has PTSD because he inbounded the ball to Tatum. In Orlando, when Kyrie got mad about, which by the way, Kyrie was wrong. There was like 2 seconds left. That was a perfectly good shot. It was a fine decision by Gordon.
Are you saying that Kyrie overreacted in the moment to something?
He's always pouting. It's a lot of hand gesturing.
Very out of character.
A lot of hand gesturing on the sidelines. Who knows what he's saying? Hayward is actually the guy. He won't ever talk about it. Mm. But they've been tight for a long time. Remember, Hayward was going to go to Cleveland before LeBron came, because they were friends. He's the guy. Like, I wonder what he thinks watching all this up close. Like, because the young guys, they're the target of his ire. They're clearly probably annoyed. Horford's like above it all, a veteran. Yeah. Hayward's the one I want to hear. Like, what's this been like for you?
I'm glad you brought up Horford, because when Kyrie had that the apology to LeBron, he had that comment where he was like, you know what we need is a 14, 15 year veteran on this team. And I'm like, why is Al Horford chopped liver? Like, what is wrong with him? He's been in the league 12 years. He's just like, he can't be the vet for this team now.
They need to sign Perk. So they need to be the team that's like Perk. Perk made such a career out of being A, LeBron's friend, and B, like locker room veteran.
That's
guy.
That's it, like locker room bouncer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could you be Perk? At this point, could any of us be Perk now and just go in? If you were in the Celtics locker room, I think we would just go in and be like, what the f*** is wrong with all you people? You're all making a lot of money. Your team is awesome.
Yeah.
Kyrie, let's drill down here. What are you actually mad about? You're the face of the franchise. You're the best player in the team. Like, what's actually annoying you?
And then he'd launch into a discourse about, like, the subjectivity of emotions and why that doesn't matter. And it's a distraction that actively tears apart locker rooms.
Yeah.
Like the tides of the moon.
Who knows? I got to think of some spice for you. Who's been there?
Your Christopher Nolan spice is actually one of my favorite spices.
Good spice.
That was good. That got people got fired up over that.
I don't want to rehash it. Oh, my belief. I haven't seen he did Dunkirk, right?
Yes, he did.
I'm just not in for a 2.5 hour war epic. I'm out. I'm sure it was good. I'm out. I'm not going to see it. Was it good?
I thought it was his best film, actually. Yeah.
I need to see The Last Batman again because my reaction to The Last Batman was, this is so f-ing stupid. I can't believe anybody likes it.
Yeah, my issue with The Last Batman is like. 12,000 cops like lived underground for 6 months and then came out and were just like ready to brawl.
How about the national government was just like, you know what? Terrorists took over New York City. We're out. Like, we're not going to help. Like, we're just going to step away from this one. There's a scene in the car where Gary Oldman is like, it's just us now. The federal government's not going to help us. We're on our own. I'm like, really? What, they're just like, no?
What about Bruce Wayne healing his shattered back by, like, doing pull-ups and stuff?
Yeah. Well, the whole thing where he goes into the underground prison and comes out and just, like, walks.
Yeah.
Just, like, walks across the desert, like, gets a cab at some point, goes to the
he's,
airport.
He's, like, calls Uber and is like, I'm going back to Gotham.
Has anyone been angry at you about their appearance or your impersonation of them or any joke on NBA Desktop?
I'm sure that that has happened, but nobody has said anything
really
to me directly yet. Now, I think, you know, we strive to kind of make fun of everyone so that there's no
equal opportunity.
So hopefully that allays any kind of like, you know, bad feelings. But, you know, like I would imagine that somebody at some point got mad, maybe Brian Colangelo.
Yeah. Well, I did think of him when I asked this question. So wait, so you've also you had Embiid on.
That's
Has
right.
Cantor come on?
Cantor came on. Yeah.
He came on. Has anyone else that you've actively pitched to come on heeded the call?
No.
Heeded the siren song?
Boban, we just kind of gathered up because we saw him lurching past the lot and we were like, Boban! And we waved him in and he came in.
He just seems like the best guy in the whole
He's
world.
He's really a sweet man.
Yeah.
Like truly, truly, truly a sweet man.
Who's your dream? Who's the next, like, we gotta get this guy
man.
On?
You know, Miles Plumlee? I want to talk about I want to talk about Burning Man. I don't know. It's like
remember the Knicks had a Plumlee. That's another good answer. There was like
Mason.
A minute where
Mason.
No, it wasn't Mason. It's the other one. Mason is in Denver.
Oh,
Miles is in
right.
Atlanta. It's the Marshall Plumlee.
Marshall.
And there was like, there was like three games. Like, well, he could be a pick and roll dive man. Like, no, he's just a third Plumlee.
It's like Good Will Hunting where Will recounts like the names of all his brothers and sisters. Marshall, Mason, was the other one?
I don't know.
Miles. Yeah, I can't even remember.
Oh, I haven't seen Good Will Hunting since the theater.
Yeah.
True story.
Wow.
Liked it in theater.
Good movie.
Thought Minnie Driver's performance was the best in the
Just
movie.
Just magnetic. Incredible.
Really good performance.
Yeah, I agree.
I thought the Colangelo collar.
Yeah.
The growing collar. Who thought of that? The fact that every time you see Colangelo, the collar gets bigger and bigger.
I don't remember, but it seemed like a bit that we should 100%
it
do.
Was a
we had it made up.
It was a fantastic bit.
Yeah.
I did feel bad for him. I still feel bad for him about the whole thing. I feel bad for him. That was a good bit. We need to address the elephant in the room.
Oh, man. Here we go.
We haven't spoken about it since it happened.
It was traumatic.
I went on binge mode.
You did. Thank you, and thank you for coming. Appreciate it.
It was last minute. I didn't have a lot of time to prepare. I was at LAX in a quiet corner of
That's
LAX.
Right. That's
I was
right.
a little, I was a little flustered.
That's right.
And you got me going on. I'm a little ashamed of myself, honestly. I got going on a Hufflepuff. I don't know how we start talking about Hufflepuff. I said some things about Hufflepuff that. I think I went too far. I went too far.
Zach, why don't you take this moment to address the Hufflepuffs in the world and just tell them you know, where you are now.
I think I called Hufflepuff the house for losers.
I think that's the case. I repudiate
I think
those
I characterized
comments.
Them as the people in school who the cool kids are like, hey, can you get up and get me a like four beers, Hufflepuff guy? And the Hufflepuff, oh, yeah, okay, all right. I think I went too far. And I think I sounded like a Neanderthal, and it's a Neanderthalish take on Hufflepuff. And you correctly pointed out that Cedric Diggory is a Hufflepuff.
Cedric Diggory was an elite athlete in the Quidditch system.
who are the other Hufflepuffs that we care about in the book? There are none.
I mean, Cedric is the big one. Cedric, you know, like they just don't get a lot of focus, but Cedric is the guy. Cedric is the guy. And if not for the fact that he was brutally murdered, he would have been a legend, an absolute legend.
Well, technically there is no winner declared at the Triwizard Tournament. Clearly Cedric is the loser because he dies.
I mean, dying is tough, yeah.
I guess they tied. They grab it
at
together.
At the same time, yeah.
So he would have gone down in history as, okay. I feel a little bit bad. I also feel like it's just
Hufflepuffs are forgiving.
People make fun of Hufflepuff a lot.
They do, and I'll
tell
you,
it's the least developed house in the book.
Here's and it's that, and here's the other issue. They kind of have a branding problem. You know, it's like that OKC logo that came out a little while back that was like that looked like a 7-Eleven coffee cup. It's or like detergent. You know, so you know, Gryffindor, the Griffins, they have the sword.
Sure.
Ravenclaw, intelligence, wit, like the cup. Slytherin is a snake. this really impressive kind of iconography. And you get to Hufflepuff, it's a badger, and it's like Steelers colors. You know, it's like, I just think that they need to improve the branding. That's really what it is, more than anything else. I think that they're fine people from a fine house. They just have kind of the least compelling branding of the four houses.
No one was ever excited to get sorted into Hufflepuff. I'm now doubling down. Literally no one in the book hears the sorting hat say Hufflepuff. Like, yes, I was hoping for Hufflepuff.
They're great. They're wonderful people. You want to marry a Hufflepuff.
I believe you and I have the same favorite book, right? Well, mine are 5 and 6 in no particular order. I think we're similar on
that. Yeah, my favorite is Order of the Phoenix 5.
What? Why is that your favorite?
Because, you know, coming off of Goblet of Fire, which is just an incredible thrill ride, especially the last third where the Triwizard Tournament starts and then you have, spoiler, Voldemort coming back and the fight in the graveyard and all that. It's absolutely chilling. And then you get to 5 and I'm not sure what your expectations are at that moment. You're thinking, oh, it's really going to increase in intensity. But J.K. does something really interesting, which is she makes Harry this really kind of angsty, annoying teen. And I just found it, one, absolutely natural as a piece of character development.
You know, so when he and Ron have a prolonged falling out in that book, right?
Well, he's like, the thing is about Harry in that book is he's 15, right? He's like, I want to play sports and meet girls. But also, I have to figure out what's going on with the Dark Lord being able to get in my mind and all this
Nobody
pressure
believes
to save
me.
The world. I have to save the world. I have to go train with Snape, who I hate and who hates me. And all I want to do is like kiss a girl and go play sports. And this is really pissing me off. And so that just seemed like I get it. Like I understand that feeling. That seemed really natural to me. And it also, the other thing is, that's a really brave thing for an author to do. Is like now, after the best book in the series, Goblet of Fire, I'm going to make my lead character kind of unlikable. And I just think that's really a ballsy, courageous, and earned thing to do, and it really sets up the back half of the
series. So I didn't read the books in real time. I read them all when 7 was about – when the last one was about to be released. I binged them all.
I did the same thing. Actually.
So did 4 in real time, did it make a leap with 4? Like in popularity and like I wonder if it, because 4 is obviously the pivot. It was like, okay, this is now serious and.
Speaking as someone, so I wasn't reading at that time, but, you knew that, it was enough of a pop culture phenomenon at that point that you knew about it even if you didn't know about it. So the fact that Voldemort had come back was so big and it was in the news, people were talking about it. So I do think there was some kind of step up in popularity because you understood that the villain has now arrived on the scene after being hinted at for 1, 2, 3 books.
What's your least favorite book? You mentioned this on the podcast.
I think least is a little uncharitable, but Chamber of Secrets is probably the slowest read, but there's so much important stuff in there.
I think Chamber of Secrets is underrated. I like Chamber of Secrets.
I don't dislike any of them, but I think if there was one I had to put last, it would be Chamber. But again, there's so much important setup about Voldemort and all that in there.
I think one is the just one. I like one though.
One's good.
You're setting up.
Yeah.
7 is sneakily in contention for me.
7 is amazing. The last 100 pages is
fantastic.
Just unbelievable, like emotionally cathartic and thrilling action.
No, I don't watch
Half-Blood Prince. The beginning of Half-Blood Prince is like when she writes the two prime ministers.
Yeah.
Chapter. That's where she really gets to flex her muscles and be like, "Oh, look, I can also do this. I can also do this other thing." Writing style. She's really incredible.
Listeners, you know that getting tickets to sporting events for friends and visitors used to stress me out. There were too many sites to check on the secondary market. Am I getting a good deal? Am I getting the best deal I can get? What if there's a better seat and I just forgot? Well, guess what? SeatGeek has solved all of those problems for you. It pulls millions of tickets into one place. Only have to visit SeatGeek and that's it. And you can easily find the best seats you want for the price you're willing to pay. They have a super easy to use color coded system. Green dots for good deals, red dots for less good deals. It's very interactive and easy to see where your seat is, whether it's obstructed, unobstructed, all that. And best of all, Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. SeatGeek should be your go-to ticket source for everything. Sports, concerts, Broadway shows, theater, comedy, all of it. Best of all, my listeners get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app. Enter promo code LOWE, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast. That's promo code LOWE. Bam, $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event, and we have the tickets.
We have to talk about Game of Thrones, even though I don't watch Game of Thrones. I've watched enough to know vaguely what's going on.
Yeah.
Are you ready for this?
I mean, I'm as ready as I can be. I'm in training camp right now in my reread and my rewatch.
Six episodes.
So, excuse me. Let me make sure. Is that six or seven? I should know this. I believe it is six. But I'm in my rewatch right now. And, you know, I'm intellectually ready, but emotionally unprepared. You know, this has been a huge part of my life. I'm sad to see it go.
I just think we talked about this on a flight from L.A. to Vegas years ago now. Mm-hmm. I just think it's – I almost want to get back in just because I don't – I'm sure it's happened. I just don't recall an example of it happening where – the secondary adaptation is so far ahead of the source material and is actually going to finish before the source material is even close to finish.
Yeah.
Like, is there, so they know how the author, how George wants to end this.
Do they?
To some degree. But there is a universe in which there is a show that ends a certain way. And then there's a books that either go past that timeline or are super different. But this is just crazy.
The books are super different now. They've done a lot of stuff that is massively divergent from the books.
I read your latest piece about what's her name,
Catelyn Stark.
Yeah, that in the book there's a. I had no idea that there's a whole thing where she comes back to life as a ghost or something.
Yeah, I do think that will, assuming that he finishes and you know, God willing, Godspeed, George. I hope you do. I think it'll be vastly different for a number of reasons. One being that, you know, just the amount of changes that they've made in the series make it so it has to be structurally different just on a fundamental level. And then two, I think, you know, you'd want to raise your game, right? You'd want to be better than the ending they did if I was him.
Interesting.
I'd want to really crush it. And I think that's, you know, obviously I'm projecting now, but I feel like that must be part of his anxiety. Is I have to be better than this. Like, whatever they did, I need to improve that. You know, and I think that's part of the issue.
I'm just sort of conceptually interested in how they wrap up the show, because the whole theme is that no one can win. Well, maybe the humans can win over the dead people, but, like, it's almost Wire-esque in that, like, the end of
cycle
the Wire.
Of violence,
yeah. The Wire is just like, it's all going to keep going. There's no resolution to anything.
Structural violence and structural inequality. Continent of Westeros is a theme of the show and the books. I do think that, you know, Dany has talked a lot about real revolutionary change, breaking the wheel and implementing a different kind of system. Does that mean democracy or some form of democracy or some kind of like federated continent where the kingdoms are independent but are loosely aligned? Unsure, but I am absolutely fascinated to find out like what that means.
I'm not going to lie. I'm rooting for the end of the Game of Thrones tourism boom in Dubrovnik.
Oh yeah, it must be tough.
It's just insane.
They just go there. They want to see the Red Keep. They want to see the castle.
They want to walk down the Shame Steps.
Yeah.
There's like crowds of hundreds of people. There's tours where you walk down.
It's never going to stop.
No, you're right. It's not going to stop.
It's never going to stop. It's going to go on for 50, 60, 70
There's
years.
A fake Iron Throne. Like a plastic replica of the Iron Throne that people find in the old city, and they pay an absurd amount of money to take pictures sitting on it. The real one is in a museum in the basement on an island just off the old city where you can go see the real Iron Throne.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you go every year?
Every year.
In August?
Usually, yeah.
I'm gonna go out this year. Let's have a coffee. Let's have an espresso.
You should, honestly, like the whole it's King's Landing. It's there. Like there are whole tours. I think they typically film. Obviously, there is no more filming, right. But they would film in the fall, and they would open up the set like 2 days during filming. The public can come see the set.
Yeah,
see pieces of the set. It's been good for Croatia, but there's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Who's your favorite character
of all time in Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Wow. I guess I'd say I'd be basic and I'm pulling the most for John, I guess, on a basic level, but I would say probably Arya and Oberyn Martell.
Arya's a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, Oberyn Martell's the guy who the mountain kills, right?
Yeah, he crushes his head. But, you know, just when he comes in the books, it is like, it's an incredible feeling because you're like, oh, finally, like, the good guys are coming back. Here we go. And then he's dead, like, spoiler, like 150 pages later, and you're like, what? But in that moment, he is just a blazing comet across the sky.
I've probably seen at this point half the episodes. Mm-hmm. I saw the first. What season is The Red Wedding?
Season 4.
That's season 4?
Yeah.
I saw everything up to The Red Wedding. So I've seen more than half the episodes then. Mm-hmm. No.
Season 3. Excuse me. Yeah. Season 3.
Yeah. I saw everything up to The Red Wedding.
Yeah.
And then I stopped.
The Red Wedding is traumatic.
Wasn't sure. I just wasn't into it enough.
Yeah.
I just wasn't into it enough. There were too many side plots that I didn't find interesting.
Oh, I see.
Every time they would go to the wall, I'd be like, we need to get off this wall. These dudes in the furry outfits, like, I just can't even look at them. Sam, is it Sam?
Sam.
See, I don't like Sam. Enough
Sam
with
Tarly.
Sam.
I mean, well, that's tough. That's George's avatar in the show, essentially. The kind of nerdy book.
It's just the dude. It's guy. Just the Hobbit guy repurposed for Game of Thrones. It's what's his name?
Frodo's Samwell
buddy.
Gamgee?
It's just that guy repurposed.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. But I saw most of the most recent season because mm-hmm. it was on while I was in Croatia, mm-hmm. and I was like, I might as well watch this.
Yeah, why not?
You know, it was controversial. There were some people who didn't like some of the. They felt like the universe had been betrayed. The rules of the universe had been betrayed a little bit in parts of that season, right?
It feels rushed in a way that the others do not, and there are – the seams are visible noticeably, I would say.
I like the Hound.
Hound is great.
Is he still alive?
Still kicking.
And I like Jaime Lannister.
Jaime Lannister
is great.
Those
are my guys.
Jaime Lannister, and I mean this sincerely, one of the most incredible character arcs like in literature and television. This is a guy who in episode one – is seen his sister.
Yeah, it's for someone who didn't read the books, episode one was like, okay, we're going right in.
And throwing a child from a window. And then by season 7, 8, you're rooting for this guy.
Yeah.
You're pulling for him.
He has got the little buddy comedy with the tall woman.
That is, Brienne, that is an absolute achievement. Really?
You shouldn't be able to, your point, you shouldn't be able to come back from the events of episode one. You should just be a pariah.
And he's come back from it. Like, I'm like, man, I hope Jamie makes it. Like, unbelievable.
Well, it worked out okay for the kid who fell off the thing. He becomes the three-eyed raven. So everything worked out the way it was supposed to for him.
I agree.
The Low Post is presented by Hulu. If you didn't know, Hulu has live sports. Can watch live games and all your favorite teams live on Hulu. No cable required.
Last question.
Yeah.
What are you doing at the lottery? What are you going to be doing the night of the lottery?
Well,
you got to do something. You got to film yourself. You got to do something.
Listen, I don't know.
You got to go. You should go.
That would be incredible. I don't know what the rigger has planned, but I'm sure we're going to do some sort of like live stream. I want to shout out NBA Desktop's personal witch, Ariana Lenarski, who does our tarot predictions, and she did predict with the Three of Cups card.
I saw this.
That the Knicks would get the top pick. So,
but then she went back. Then there was some ambivalence, right? Or maybe I'm mixing up.
There's always a little bit of ambiguity, but the Three of Cups, as I understand it through her, is a very, very strong and celebratory card. So, I'm not going to get my hopes up, but I am hopeful. And if it happens, I will explode. I will turn into dust. It will be one of the greatest moments of my life, up there with Linsanity, which only lasted 3 weeks.
But Linsanity was incredible. I think you need to really go all out for this. And people need to just be prepared. It's going to be 86% chance. 88.5, whatever it is. They're 14%. So it's 86% chance. It's not Zion.
Yeah, I know.
Just mentally, just say the number out loud.
I
86.
Listen, you didn't feel the energy when that Three of Cups card got turned over, Zach.
I didn't. I can't, watching it later as a viewer of NBA Desktop, I can't replicate what you felt in that moment.
It was unbelievable.
Well, I want the Knicks to be good because I live in New York and I'm tired of them being crappy. So, all right, you got to do a panel. Your panel, It's, please tell people the name of your panel.
Sports myth busting, and we're going to be busting myths. Like, is the Kardashian curse real, for instance?
I think, isn't that in the title of the panel? Yeah. The word Kardashian.
Word Kardashian curse.
Tristan Thompson really helping you out with some recent news.
Man, that guy. Shouts to my guy. We call him Tristan Third Trimester Thompson on NBA Desktop.
I have to say, I laughed. The first time I heard that, I laughed. I cringed and laughed at the same time, which is the appropriate reaction.
I mean, listen, these are just facts. That's just the thing that happened.
I haven't kept up, shockingly, with the minute-by-minute development of the story.
With Jordan.
I don't know who that woman is.
Apparently,
she's part of the Kardashian clan, kind of.
Yes, she's adjacent friend of Kendall. And owes Kendall much of her career and her public standing.
Is Kendall the one dating Ben Simmons?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, wait. Yes.
Okay.
And so apparently the story now on the street is that they merely kissed, which I have two thoughts here. First thought is, even if they merely kissed, Tristan Thompson has a young child with his, not wife, but basically wife. He shouldn't be out here kissing friends of his wife's extended family, one. And two, I don't believe that they just kissed. I don't believe it.
Well, this is all going to come out on the – this is going to be an explosive panel. People thought the Whit Grousebeck Genie Bus Summit was going to be an explosive
where
panel.
Where no one could say the word Anthony Davis and no one could speak on it.
That player.
The player number one.
Player number
one. Bob Mullen.
All right. Well, Jason, I'm very happy for all your success. The Ringer is awesome. Ringer Desktop is awesome. You're awesome. Thank you for coming on. And I will think of you when the lottery happens. I'll think of you and I'll wonder what you've got planned. But I'll be in Chicago for the lottery and I'll be thinking of you.
Thank you so much, Zach. Thanks for having me.
No problem.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.